It is Thursday, January 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Pakistan mourns the victims of Wednesday's attack at a university.
It is to be expected that some groups will try their best to carry out attacks like that, particularly symbolic attacks.
A British judge says Russia's president probably approved the killing of a former KGB spy in London in 2006. Germany tries to come to terms with the New Year's Eve violence against women in Cologne, and two rock legends prepare to embark on tour. It's all ahead. Pakistan observed an official day of mourning Thursday following Wednesday's massacre on a university campus in the country's northwest that left at least 21 dead, mostly students, and dozens wounded. Flags flew at half-staff while security was stepped up at schools and educational centers. The attack was universally condemned. Mark Toner is a U.S. State Department spokesman.
We offer our deepest condolences to the victims and their families during this time of grief. This was, again, a particularly appalling attack that the terrorists carried out yet again on an educational institution, clearly targeting Pakistan's future generations. The United States stands with the government of Pakistan and their efforts to create a secure, stable, and prosperous country, and we will stand side by side with Pakistan in its ongoing fight against terrorism.
This was the second attack on a Pakistani school in a year, with more than 150 killed in an attack on a school for the children of security force personnel in Peshawar in December 2014. That prompted the government's national action plan aimed at combating extremism. A breakaway Taliban faction has taken responsibility for Wednesday's attack. Pakistan analyst Moin Chima of the Australian National University tells International Edition's Victor Beattie extremists seem to be making the statement that despite a crackdown, they can strike with impunity.
Terrorist attacks in northwestern Pakistan and, in fact, the rest of the country have actually dramatically gone down. But it is to be expected that some groups will try their best to carry out attacks like that, particularly symbolic attacks, which remind people of the Peshawar attack from a year ago, just to be able to assert that they're still around, that they still have some capacity to inflict damage, and to try to pressurize the Pakistani populace into changing perhaps the stance on the fight against terrorism.
At least 18 students and two professors killed in this attack. Is this a statement against Western-style education?
Well, it's a symbolic attack in many ways. The attack in Peshawar that happened a year ago was deliberately targeted at the children of military personnel. It was targeted at a school where the children of military officers attended that particular school. So it was specifically targeted at the military. This attack seems to be designed to remind people of that previous attack. There's another very important symbolic significance. This took place at Bacha Khan University. Bacha Khan, not many people outside Pakistan would know, but Bacha Khan was a pre-partition and post-partition Pashtun leader of great standing in the northwestern frontier, a leftist leader, a secularist. And so in many ways, this attack happened on his death anniversary, where an event celebrating his life and his politics was scheduled to be held on the school. So this was also designed very deliberately, it appears, to target or to challenge that sort of politics, that sort of legacy and tradition in the northwestern parts of the country.
Political leaders, military officials, as well as the parents of many students have vowed to pursue the education and remain undaunted against such attacks. But can we expect more such attacks?
It's impossible now to rule out, especially as the Taliban, the various factions, they fragment further. Many of the Taliban fighters have actually, according to the military at least, moved into Afghanistan and are getting some support and refuge there, and then crossed the very, very porous border between Afghanistan and northwestern Pakistan to carry out any attacks that they possibly can. So despite the success of the military operation, one cannot rule out the possibilities of further attacks happening, whether they are at, you know, schools, colleges, educational institutions, markets, etc. Have always been soft targets, easy targets. Now that the Taliban seem to be in somewhat of a disarray, one can expect that they will primarily target such soft targets rather than military convoys or military installations that they have on certain occasions in the past have successfully been able to do.
Moin Chima says this presents a test for the civilian government in winning the battle for the northwest border areas. He says this fight needs to go beyond just a military solution to include economic prosperity and justice reform. A British judge on Thursday said that Russian President Vladimir Putin probably approved a plan to poison ex-KGB agent Alexander Litvinenko. I'm joined now by VOA London correspondent Luis Ramirez. So, Luis, in this the ruling, the judge indicated that the Russian president was very likely highly involved in this.
Yes, the report says that President Vladimir Putin probably approved the assassination of Litvinenko, which happened in 2006, when he met with two Russian agents at a hotel in central London. The allegation, which is now conclusive, is pretty much proven by British investigators, was that they laced his tea with a highly toxic radioactive substance known as radioactive polonium. This resulted in contamination of the hotel, and a contamination pretty much spread across the streets of London wherever Mr. Litvinenko was after that moment. He fell ill very quickly, died 23 days later.
And apparently when he was dying, Litvinenko accused Putin of ordering his killing.
You know, we're seeing these photos taken of Litvinenko as he lay dying in his hospital bed, completely emaciated. His hair was gone. He said that he wanted the world to see what Putin had done to him. This assassination comes after a great deal of acrimony because, of course, Litvinenko himself was a Russian spy. He worked for the Federal Security Bureau, which is the agency that took over after the KGB when the Soviet Union was dissolved. And he had a falling out with his agency. There was a great sense of betrayal on either side. But certainly that was made worse when Litvinenko came out and publicly criticized President Putin, including on personal matters. He described him, he described President Putin as a pedophile, which of course incensed the Russian leader, who the Kremlin then, of course, denied these allegations. And so that's some of the background leading up to this.
Has there been any reaction so far from Russia?
Russia has not reacted immediately to this report. However, in the 9 years since this assassination happened, Russia has claimed that it was not directly, it was not responsible for his death. The two agents who are named as the ones who killed Litvinenko fled Britain. They got on planes, went back to Moscow. And Britain has since requested their extradition. Russia has declined.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Luis. That's VOA London correspondent Luis Ramirez.
Thank you, Sarah.
Well, now looking at social media for reaction on this story, there are at least 46,000 tweets under hashtag Litvinenko. A Johns France Press tweets, Litvinenko report extremely disturbing, according to the British Prime Minister's office. Sky News reports Russia calls British hashtag Litvinenko inquiry biased and politically motivated. Frank Gardner tweets that the amount of radioactive polonium-210 found in Litvinenko's body was so great that he had to be buried in a lead-lined coffin. And that's reaction on social media. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Researchers Constantine Batygin and Mike Brown at the California Institute of Technology say that they have found evidence of a giant gaseous planet traveling in an odd and drawn-out orbit in the far reaches of the solar system. If confirmed, the newly found planet would be the solar system's ninth planet. Pluto had that honor until it was demoted to dwarf planet status back in 2006. The researchers say this possible new planet, they nicknamed Planet Nine, has a mass that's about 10 times greater than Earth's and about 5,000 times that of Pluto. Planet Nine is thought to orbit the Sun from a distance of nearly 20 times further than Neptune, whose average distance from the Sun is about 4.5 billion kilometers. The researchers continue to fine-tune their simulations to find out more about the planet and have begun, along with other researchers, to scan the skies to see if they can get a direct look at Planet Nine. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, rock legends Sting and Peter Gabriel prepare to tour together. Germany is still coming to terms with the New Year's Eve attacks on women in Cologne, allegedly by men of Arab or North African appearance. Cologne police say criminal charges stemming from the crime wave that evening have risen to more than 800, and about 500 of them involve groping and sexual assaults. Recently, six Pakistanis and a Syrian man were attacked in Cologne by gangs in incidents that were seen as retaliatory. Germany's open-door policy that welcomed more than 1 million refugees and migrants last year is also now facing criticism. I spoke with Andreas Roeder, professor of contemporary history at the University of Mainz, which is about 180 kilometers from Cologne. I'm interested in knowing or learning about the impact of the recent New Year's Eve attacks on Germany, and particularly in the area where you are, in the sort of greater Rhineland area. What are the concerns of the public, and particularly of women there?
Germany is a country which does not have much experience with multicultural immigration. So the integration of Turkish guest workers since the 1960s has not been a success story in Germany for decades. So this time, Germans wanted to do better, and so they developed what was called the welcome culture in last year's fall. However, this humanitarian attitude was joined by a certain lopsided naivety. Many people were thinking that the influx of hundreds of thousands of migrants would just solve the German demographic problem. And now, after the Cologne attacks, they are realizing that this influx of migrants is not only a solution for the lack of skilled workers in Germany, but also entails serious problems. As I observe the public mood in Germany, it's pretty much on the brink. And the danger is the German public tends to go from one extreme to the other.
Chancellor Angela Merkel has promoted Germany, particularly, you know, recently, as a place where refugees are welcome. Looking at this for her domestically, is she in political difficulty now with the recent attacks in Cologne and in some other places as well?
The opposition against her politics is massively growing in Germany. So there is, on the one hand, the new right-wing party, the so-called Alternative für Deutschland, a right-wing party, which is addressing a nationalist audience on the one hand, but at the same time addressing worried middle classes in Germany, which is the center ground of the Christian Democrats of Angela Merkel's party. So the unrest within her own party is massively rising and pressing Merkel to change her course. However, when she embarked on her course of open borders and refused any limits for the influx of migrants, she was playing at very high stakes. And so I think if she U-turned, this would fundamentally rock her credibility and undermine her position. If she does not, opposition will further grow. So I think she is in a rather awkward position.
Well, how are the refugees settling in Germany? I mean, there are many people, such families with small children, who no doubt are obeying the laws. But how has the recent New Year's Eve violence impacted them? And could it make their path in Germany more difficult now?
So migrants in Germany are mainly residing in provisional dwellings, and they are living here without regular employment and activities. So you can imagine that this is a rather explosive composition, particularly when numbers grow. So what migrants are observed to do in Germany is that they tend to go to larger cities, and many politicians are fearing that this will lead to the building of ghettos in Germany. So German politicians are articulating ideas to restrict freedom of movement of settlement for migrants. The Cologne events revealed that there is much perplexity, particularly in the German society, even helplessness However, this is the case everywhere. In Europe, it's the case in Sweden or Denmark as well. The danger in Germany is that confidence in politics is deteriorating and that Germany will miss to find the necessary means in order to integrate these migrants.
That's Andreas Roeder, professor of contemporary history at the University of Mainz in Germany. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Two rock and roll icons, Sting and Peter Gabriel, have announced a new North American tour together. As International Edition's David Byrd reports, the Rock, Paper, Scissors tour will have the artists performing not only their own music, but also each other's songs.
Sting, once the frontman for The Police and also a highly successful solo artist, is joining forces with Peter Gabriel, who came to fame with Genesis and has also had a very successful solo career. The Rock, Paper, Scissors tour starts June 21st in Columbus, Ohio. Sting told the Associated Press the idea came after his successful world tour with Paul Simon.
Where we traded songs, we traded musicians, we sang together, and the take-home that people got from that was they loved it when we did things together. So I thought, I'd like to do that again. And who would I do it with? And Peter was one of a very short list of people.
This is not the first time the two artists have toured together. The pair toured on the Amnesty Tour in the 1980s. Peter Gabriel says that experience was one of the best tours ever.
It was, well, we never knew where we were going. We traveled to all sorts of amazing countries, great people, but we had all these fantastic musicians traveling together. There were two planes, one carrying the gear and one carrying musicians. Anyway, so that gave us a sense of what it might be, and it was a lot of fun.
Sting and Peter Gabriel are still working out what they want to play and who will do which songs. But Sting says that both artists know the crowd wants to hear the hits.
I mean, we're in those discussions right now and having ideas of, you know, we want to sing a lot of hits, basically. People want to hear us sing the songs we're famous for. But it's always interesting to trade a song, say, you know, take that one. So I'm not precious about giving him whatever he wants.
Peter Gabriel says he is looking forward to having fun with his friend, just like they did in the 1980s.
It's playful, and I think, yeah, we certainly found when we toured together in the past, there was a lot of, in fact, a lot of pillow fights on aeroplanes.
There were pillow fights.
But it was fun. It really was. And there was a lot of great music happening.
And the two artists promise that any disputes on the tour will be settled by the finger-throwing game, which gives it its name, Rock, Paper, Scissors. Though Peter Gabriel says he always waits just a little bit behind his opponent to see what they throw before finalizing his choice. Sting and Peter Gabriel's tour runs through July 25th and ends in Edmonton, Alberta. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
An interesting name for a tour, rock, paper, scissors. Anyway, well, best of luck to them. That's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program, Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Entering its last year in office, the Obama administration has made it clear that engagement with Asia continues to be a top priority, with an agenda that includes economic, security, and political cooperation with Asian partners. In 2016, the United States will push for approval of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a trade agreement between 12 Pacific Rim countries. The United States will also continue to modernize its alliances and to deepen security relationships with emerging partners. In the Asia-Pacific region, the United States is ready to support its allies in building maritime security, humanitarian disaster relief, and counter-piracy capacity. Maritime security and territorial issues will be clearly on the agenda this year as well, said Deputy National Security Advisor for Strategic Communications Ben Rhodes during a recent speech at the Washington Foreign Press Center. The United States is committed to upholding freedom of navigation, he said. On issues like the South China Sea disputes, we'd like to encourage all parties to de-escalate tensions and resolve their issues through international law. The United States will also continue to cooperate with China on issues of common interest. So, for example, last year, one of the biggest issues that we focused on domestically and internationally was climate change, said Mr. Rhodes.
We would not have achieved the Paris Agreement without the cooperation that the United States and China had on that issue, both in terms of the announcement made in Beijing during his last trip and the subsequent cooperation leading into Paris.
We are going to work very closely with China on a whole range of issues related to the Asia-Pacific, said Mr. Rhodes. For example, we'll be working with China through the UN Security Council and also in our own bilateral discussions about how to demonstrate to North Korea that its recent nuclear test and the threat it poses to our allies and to the world will lead to greater costs, consequences, and isolation.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at voanews.com/editorials. www.voanews.com.